Welcome to a new episode of Step Into the Future. This is our podcast about fashion, sustainability, and social change. My name is Henning, and I welcome very much my colleague from the fair fashion industry today. Hi, Bert from Matjeans, from the Netherlands.
Hello, Henning. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. Nice to meet you. Are you at home or at office these days, or where are you right now?
We're doing half-half. At this moment, I'm at home. I live close to the beach, so in the evening time, I can easily go and have a jump into the sea. It's a nice city in Bergen.
Yeah.
We have a lot of German tourists in summer, so it's very nice here.
Okay, I'm a lucky man. I believe tonight or in the afternoon, maybe you take a deep swim in the ocean.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's cool.
Definitely.
So, you, for all of our listeners who don't know about Matjeans yet or just have heard about the brand, Matjeans, you produce sustainable jeans.
Yeah.
On a very high quality. Mm-hmm. And trying to make it as environmental friendly and social as possible. And the stylish jeans you are using, we are using them a lot. So maybe some of you know them already from our photo shootings or Instagram stories, because we feel very much attached to what you and your team does. So I'm very happy that you have time today to talk with me about what you do. And you founded your company in 2013. That's right, I guess.
2012.
2012 already. Okay, so 1 year earlier. So I think that's almost 2.5-3 years before we started with Melaware.
Okay.
Maybe you can explain a little bit how you started the company, or basically what made you to found Matjeans, because unlike how I founded Melaware, which I explained in some podcast episode, you have a little bit of different story. Maybe you can tell us the story, how everything began and what made you to start a fair denim brand.
Yeah, you want the long version or the short version, Henning?
Maybe first the short version. I have maybe some questions to it in detail, yeah.
Okay, I'll try to make it as short as possible.
Yeah, in your words.
I'll just have to stop this email program sending me emails all the time and making noise.
Sorry, you're a busy man. I know this. So, yeah, no problem. You stop it.
I stop it. So, I started my career in 1982 in the denim, the textile industry. And I worked for this very big Dutch trading company who sent me to Taiwan for their office in Taiwan to do the sourcing and the final inspection of orders. And at that time, we still have quota, so I had to do the quota negotiations. It was a very interesting time, and things were quite normal. Of course, prices at that time were better over there, but it wasn't what it is now. So I'll make it shorter. I moved to Hong Kong. I worked for the French office for the same company. And I saw in my life the textile industry change from something that you make to be beautiful, to protect yourself also, nice quality. And I saw it explode into the last years into some fast fashion rubbish production, and also by not taking care of people making your clothes. And it has really went to something I totally disliked at the end of my career. So I sold my company in France in 2008. I was lucky 3 months before the crisis, I was able to sell this company. And so a lot of people think I'm very intelligent, but it was sheer luck that 3 months later the whole world collapsed. And so I was sitting at home with this money and not knowing what to do. So I decided to take some years off. I took an early pension. I said, I'm still at the age that I can do things. And it gave me also time to rethink the whole world and how this whole textile industry works. And I learned that things can be done much better. So more and more, I decided to, whenever I start a business again, I would do it in a completely different way and have as a first point is to make sure that the people that are making garments are well treated and well paid. And secondly, how can we make products that don't use so much chemicals and that don't harm the environment and all those kind of things. So if you study that, you learn more and more and more, and you get shocked every time more when you dive into the details. And so we decided, I decided to start a jeans company because the jeans, it's the biggest item in textiles, firstly. And secondly, it's also the most polluting item. When you take the cotton and the washing and the chemicals and everything together, it's actually quite a horrible product. So I decided if we can change something there, we can make an example company. It would be nice, of course, to take this item. And the second step we decided to do is, if you as a producer are responsible for what you make and you try to be realistic with the people that make it and also with the chemicals and everything you use, that's not good enough because you still make products that at the end of life have to go somewhere. So I felt responsible for the products that I put into the market and try to find a way to also solve that problem. And then you have to think about cotton. Cotton is, of course, a very nice material to make your clothing, and you can use GOTS certified bio cotton, which is good, but still there is cotton, new cotton to be made. And with jeans, it's actually, I found out, very handy to recycle the cotton. You have to compare it with the paper industry, where you saw that 70 years ago, people decided, saw that, hey, if I take old paper back, we can make new paper out of it. So you don't need to cut trees anymore. You can just use the old paper. And with jeans, we found out it's actually the same. You can take back old jeans, shred them, and there's a whole kind of different, difficult process to make new yarns out of it, but it can be done. And so we decided to do that. So three steps.
Okay, you mentioned that you come from this conventional textile background, which you yes. left in 2008. And yeah. Was there one particular happening or experience or something that was kind of an eye-opener to you where you realized over the period of time something where you have started or what you've experienced in the company you've worked has changed so much that you needed to quit that company or to sell that company? Or is it the sum of different experience?
Yeah, it's this last thing. It's okay. Every drop at a time, more and more you realize, hey, this is not possible anymore. This is not fair. We are harming everything, nature, human beings, and more and more it goes faster and faster. The production of clothing has exploded the last 15 years even. So it's all kind of little steps on top that you realize that, hey, come on, it's not possible anymore.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like for me, the turning point also, I was working in a conventional company after my bachelor degree, and it was not only about fashion or textiles or garments, but also materials and craftsmen's and tools industries using. But I realized that so many things are missing to call the action done by companies being sustainable. And then I read a book and I met a community around peace and Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus, who called this social business as a concept, how business can go for a good. In his sense, it was more about the social change. Yeah. But I was also very much inspired and interested in the environmental aspects. What was like maybe turning points for you where you got information or knowledge from outside? Was it after you sold the company that you started to read books, go to conference, or where did you got the knowledge or the idea of making denim in a sustainable way? And in the second step, also to go for a circular fashion concept.
No, it was the time that I could take off, that I was lucky enough to have some money and time and take a rest and to realize, hey, there's something going totally wrong. And it wasn't really at the time when I was totally into it. You work hard, you run hard, and I can say after that, you don't even realize what you're doing sometimes, to be honest. And so it was good for me to step back and look at it from a different angle. I still like the garment industry. I like clothing, but not in the way that I saw it happening with this fast fashion, throwaway, rubbish quality things. I didn't like that idea.
And this idea of making denim circular or producing denim that can be used in a circular textile industry, was that there from day one when you founded Mudgeons
I founded the reason I founded it because I wanted to make a circular company. And the idea came from, we are a member of Maatschappelijk Verantwoord Ondernemen, that's Dutch for social enterprises that gather together once in a while in Holland. And there was one guy talking about the circular economy. Mm-hmm. Sorry?
Yeah, that was what he gave you this inspiration for that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, he talked to me about that's a little bit strange example, but I always mention it, the washing machine. If you are the producer of a washing machine, then the linear economy means that you make a washing machine and you hope that it breaks down after 3 years, because then you can sell another one.
Correct.
And if you take things differently, and that's how I came to the leasing idea. If you take things differently and you say, no, I want to be, as a producer, responsible for the product when it's in the market, and I'll repair it, and I'll tell my customers that they don't have to buy it from me, but they can lease it. If you take the washing machine, and then you, as a producer, you are responsible for the water use, the electricity, the energy, mm-hmm. the making of the machine, and that you can only get paid a monthly fee. Then you are going to think differently, because you will say, okay, this machine has to last very long. It has to use less water, less energy. And when I take it back after 10 years, I should be able to get out all the raw materials and be able to reuse that again, because it's value. And if you think as a producer in that way, then the whole world changes. And it's very interesting, because it's not saying we are doing everything wrong, or you are doing this wrong or that wrong. It's just saying this is very positive, new possibility, the circular economy, to do things differently. And I really like that. I thought this is fantastic. If I can implement this in the jeans industry, then it's a winning formula. I think that customers are interested to say, hey, I buy a pair of jeans, or I lease a pair of jeans. I'm not the owner, but I can use the product. So you go from ownership to using, to the performance of a product. That's a very interesting shift in the whole world, I think, if we can do that.
And how does it work in detail? Like, I mean, you have your own webshop, or you have also retailers selling your jeans. How do they lease the jeans? How does it work?
So we have two formulas, which one is very easy and it's very common. That is, if you buy a pair of jeans from us, you can send back your old jeans and you get a 10 euro discount. Okay. And you know that we will do something intelligent with the jeans that comes to us. So it has to be 95% cotton, because otherwise we cannot recycle it. If you want to create a circular economy, you are talking about a mono stream of raw material. If you start mixing materials, it's very complicated. But if you keep it cotton, or if you keep it only wool is very recyclable, and you keep it mono stream, that's very well done. So that's the first point you have to take care of. And that means also in design, you have to start thinking in a circular way. And the second option we have is you can lease a pair of jeans from us. You pay $7.50 a month. And after 1 year, you can decide either to keep it as long as you wish, because that's, of course, the idea that the product lasts 10 years. But if you want to change, and if we give you the option to say, hey, I would love to have a new color or new washing or a different model, then you can change it and the $7.50 starts again. You can send back the old one. And the idea behind this is that you know, shifting from ownership to performance of a product. And that's very interesting, I think.
That sounds really interesting. And are the customers more into the model of buying and returning it against a voucher, or are they more into the leasing of a monthly fee?
No, well, at the moment we are going to we don't do the leasing in stores, because okay. It's administrative, big hassle, is very complicated. And we only do it on our own website. So half of our turnover we do with stores. The other half is our own web shop, where half of that turnover is leasing. So people can choose either to buy or lease on our web shop. And many, many people lease their jeans on our web shop. But we want to increase it. We are now working on an IT program. It's a large investment to be able to offer, to give stores the possibility to have a fit kit, that they have all our styles, and that they can, they sort of become then the seller of a lease contract. Yeah, it sounds a bit strange, but instead of buying and selling, they don't have the hassle of buying and taking risks and get their money blocked. They can just have all our styles and the colors, And with that, they can start selling lease contracts, and they get a commission on the lease contract. And this will happen. I hope the IT program will be ready end of September, 15th of October. And then we start with all the stores with this. And I think it will be a big moment for us, actually.
Must be a very technical, tricky thing. But
it's very difficult.
To reach many more people for the leasing concept, because try the product and in the store, and you select your color and the size, you get it delivered, and you pay a monthly fee, and then you can use it both online or offline in the shop to make the decision.
And that's going to be huge, but it has to be administrative perfectly well, because if you have manual work on that, it's going to be a disaster. So we are...
be easy and convenient for both the retailers and the consumers, I guess.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And for us also. It has to be doable.
Okay, so that's the leasing concept and how you make sure that you get products back into your company's warehouse to decide whether to reuse them by leasing them out again or sending them secondhand or even make new products out of them. So it's important that you consider it in the product design. I mean, we had also some podcast episodes on cradle to cradle and circularity where we all, the cradle to cradle NGO and experts, explain how important that is. And I also went into detail to make sure that the fabrics are not mixed with too many fibers, or mainly one fiber is best, to make sure that you really technically can make use out of it, and to really make sure that you use the cotton once harvested and taken into a garment again and again for the circular industry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's really interesting, and I mean, you touched it already by talking about the product design and the ingredients of the raw material. But we also, I mean, recently you launched, or you're about to launch also a new collection, which is dyed differently. Maybe you can explain briefly what is the difference now, what you are doing right now, and what's the innovation behind, or the idea behind this new sustainable dyeing process you are using.
Well, it's not dyeing at all.
No dyeing at all.
No, it's actually, you have to imagine that when we send all these old jeans back to Valencia, because that's the factory where they recycle our old jeans, and they can use today up till 40% jeans into new fabric. So we have to still add 60% organic cotton. So the best material we can make now is 40% post-consumer waste, because a lot of people are talking about now recycling cotton, but they cheat a little bit because they use the cutting losses and things like that, or they use a lot of polyester and make mixed material, which is, of course, a disaster. We use old jeans. We shred them. We mix them. There's a big progress. It's very complicated. It's more expensive than the virgin cotton. So, you know, it would be easier for me to make a 100% cotton organic jeans, but we don't want it. We want to use our old jeans, 40-60. And if you do that and you start twining again and making these yarns, we realized halfway the production that's a very beautiful light blue yarn is coming out. And normally we would put that into the indigo dye. We now buy the indigo dye, which is cradle to cradle certified, but before indigo is not a very nice dye stuff, but the one we use now is already better. But if you don't dye it at all, you get this very nice light blue color. And we said, okay, why don't we just use that? And we take it halfway out of the production. We make that fabric. And we started to make a collection. And it came out really nice. We showed it the first time, last time, that we had Neonite. And the customer response was incredible. And not only for the story behind the product, but just the look. It looked really well. And then the next step was, okay, we take this light blue one. So we made a collection out of it, which we all launched in September, the undyed collection. But we also realized that you can make a garment dye. So you put the garment into the dye. And with mineral dyes, which is a very friendly dye stuff, we made some very nice organic look-like colors, like a stone color, a more yellowish color. And it's all, the funny thing is that on the trendsetter indications now show that these colors are actually spot on. So we're both with the story and for the trends, we are really on the right track.
It seems like a win-win situation. Yes. I mean, on the one hand, you take existing material, cotton, up to 40% and mix it with fresh cotton, and then while shredding it, you receive a color or a fabric that you don't even have to dye again, because by default, a color appears that is not only looking good right now, but it's even trend forecasted. So, I mean, you save a lot of dye stuff and chemicals, and you can make use out of existing fabrics and fibers. That's really cool. And this mineral dyeing, or is it more a treatment? How does that look like? I mean, it's a natural ingredient, or what is this about the mineral dyeing?
It's a mineral dye. It's from an Italian company, and they make it from stones. It looks really very natural. So the exact chemical, the exact notations are on our website. But it's a very friendly dye stuff, yes.
Okay. So I think consumers and people who are more interested in what's going up right now, I think you mentioned in September a lot of new things will be visible on Madjin's website and Instagram account about this new technique. So I think it's quite important to follow and to see what's happening. I mean, there are a lot of nice and very sustainable solutions, and we learned about the overall concept that you're following by making the denim more circular. I mean, in general, you mentioned it also in the very beginning, like many people consider it to be very toxic or a very hard process to make denim. Yeah. And the denim, I mean, we expect that it is very durable, and that it's at the same time, it should be very fashionable, and they want a lot of, I don't know, embroideries or some finishes.
Washings or holes or worn out look.
Yeah, a lot of things that you need to keep in mind to make it like state of the art. So do you have to make compromises sometimes? Because, I mean, I know from Mailerware and the work we are doing, the product designers are always challenged because we may not use this material or that material, or we don't find a supplier having it certified in their range, or it has some padding or something. What are your limitations when it comes to sustainability and still meeting the expectations of the customers from the conventional industry?
Or our own expectations. Now,
want to deliver. What maybe you can give some examples of some of these challenges that you face in your daily work and to develop.
There are challenges. We, of course, the jeans, the 4060 we make is without any elastan. We didn't want to use elastan, but of course, for the comfort and for the shape of the jeans for women, you need to use elastan. So we use 2% now maximum, which gives a nice feel to the material. That's a compromise we do, and with that we can only use 23% of recycled cotton. So that's a pity, but okay, we have to do that. On the other hand, we try to make not collections every season. So we call ourselves seasonless, because we think that a very good 5-pocket jeans can be an essential part of your wardrobe. We sometimes add new colors, like we did now with the garment dyed and the undyed. We sometimes, of course, have to add a new form, but then we take out an old form. We try to be very careful with making new samples and new productions. So everything we do is delivered never out of stock. So we one big aspect of our sustainability is that we do not overproduce. We have the material in stock in Tunisia, the factory that makes our jeans. And we have limited stocks centralized in Holland, where we deliver now in 30 countries to 300 retailers. And the retailers can order small quantities. So they can say, I'll try a little bit. If it works, they can reorder. They will be delivered the next day. And we centralize the stock, and we can see if we need to produce more in a certain style or size. And this is a huge part of sustainability, because normally producers and brands overproduce, and they deliver the stores and they tell them, you have to sell it, whatever happens, this is your problem. And then you get discounts, sales and things. We never have a pair of mud jeans in sales. We don't want that. We just say to the retailers, buy less. And if you need more, you sell it well, you can always reorder. So that's a big part of our sustainability also.
So you try to really make sure that supply and demand is in an equal balance, and that you also make sure that your quality is not following too much as per the trends. I mean, of course, you change your design, so you get new ones. but you try to make them, I mean, similar to the strategy that we are following with our Garmin NS collection of the bags, that we that you try to hit a design point that that is made to last and that you don't have to change. I think that makes also, I assume, life easier for your producer. You mentioned it, that you produce in Tunisia. Is it mainly everything coming from one factory, or do you have different, because you have different denims, or how is your production side managing your demand and your
design? We are working with one fabric supplier, so this Valencia Royo, and we work with one jean supplier only. And like you say, that's true. Also during these difficult times, we were able to give him ongoing orders, so they have a very flat flow of orders from us all year round. There's no peaks, okay. no
different drops a year, so that
that's for them also very important, because they can assure a reasonable workload the whole year round for the workers without having that they have to do night work or 7 days a week work to be able to deliver our orders. That doesn't happen.
But the idea is to give a continuous order cycle to them, so that they have continuous work and also have.
And you're very right to mention this, because it's a very big problem also in the fashion industry, where buyers are pushing for promotions. They have to have it this time, and it's a nightmare. I've seen it.
And you mentioned also that was also beneficial to you now in the time when, we're slowly recovering in Europe from COVID-19, but whereas in the producing countries, the situation sometimes looks much different. Yeah. For example, for us in India, it's still a big, big issue, and it's very difficult for them to manage the daily routine. How did you manage it, especially in Tunisia with your production side, and how did you manage with your team internally in the Netherlands and your customers? I mean, what was the biggest challenges for you, or how did you experience the time?
Actually, we came out very well. It's of course not very fair to say it was a positive time, but for us, first of all, we saw there was a much more interest in sustainable brands widely. So our website doubled the number of hits as from mid-March. So people started really looking for different items. Our team in our Holland office started to work from home. And I was surprised by the success of that. The people at home are much more concentrated. They don't have this idiot Bert van Son running around all day saying stupid things, and they can work finally all day long and be concentrated. Now we realized that we are doing actually very well. We now change a little bit. We meet with small teams on exact days during the week, but we do a lot still from home, which is working well. In Valencia, they kept on working, but they had to stop their factory also for a few weeks, because in Spain it was also quite a disaster. But we luckily had enough material in Tunisia already to be able to keep on delivering. And the Tunisian factory, the country Tunisia wasn't hit very much. There were not many cases, but they still had to close the factory for 3 weeks, I think, which was okay. I mean, we had enough stocks and things to surpass these 3 weeks. And we saw, besides our web shop doing really well, we saw the customers we work with, the retailers, are the special kind of retailer that is the smaller one, we can say, very dedicated, people that do not have stores that are on the most expensive locations in expensive streets, but more, we can say, on BC locations where they were able to keep their costs low and also keep their stores open. So we also had a continuous flow of orders throughout these difficult times. So we cannot complain, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, it's similar experience that we had, that especially the people and the retailers and the customers who are more conscious, it's getting more and more, especially due to that time also. And they are more dedicated to the brands and to the retailers they already like and where they go to buy. And they are more supporting, and it's not the sustainable fashion industry that is the first who's suffering from a stop in demand for fashion, but rather more people are looking for it, which is actually really good because, I mean, it's hardly needed, as we also explained at the beginning, with all the difficulties we are seeing or facing in convention textile industry, which we try to overcome. Maybe you can quickly say, is there anything beside what you already mentioned that you want to highlight, or where you are working on right now, or some concepts or idea or new things that you are looking forward to do in the future? What can we expect from Magines in the next 1 to 2 years? What is some maybe personal or sustainable or company goals you're having, maybe for the customers or with the producers? Maybe there's something you...
Yeah, no, well, I gave it already away, but the big thing for us is at the end of this year to be able to offer to our stores this possibility of offering their customers the lease program, because many stores and many people are waiting for this. So that's our big thing for the coming moment. And then if this grows fastly, which I expect to do, then I, of course, have to go again to speak to investors and see how we can finance all this. Because, of course, if you have a lot of leasers, you also have to finance it. So that's our challenge for the coming time, I would say.
Yeah, I can assume. I mean, it's both. It's first of all a lot of work to provide a technical and logistic solution, and then on the second hand to finance it, as the payback comes only after months and
Absolutely.
Months.
Absolutely. And the other thing we are working very hard on, and we promised to bring it on in 2020, but it's going to be hard now. We have a little bit of delay, but we did promise the world to come out with the first 100% post-consumer waste recycled pair of jeans.
Okay, so where really the content is 100% cotton from a jeans that was already worn and used in a previous stage of its usage phase.
And we have already some test material now, very small swatch. Okay. It is possible. We are going to use two techniques. So one is the conventional technique we use now, the recycling of cotton in a mechanical way, with really shredding it and then reusing it. And the other half we think is going to be made from another technique called chemical recycling. That's a bit the dirty word. You can also call it molecular recycling. It's a similar way how they make from bamboo yarn. So we have to bring the cotton back to sort of a pulp and make filaments of that. And then if we twine the both, if we mix both, we are able to make a jeans-like, look-like yarn.
Okay, so also a lot of R&D and new fibers or new materials and techniques that you're working on. So I think we will see a lot of new and innovation also from Magines in the next months already with a leasing in store, and then in the future also with new items. Is there, do you think that there's a change, and especially at looking at the denim or jeans industry, do you see many that follow your concept or similar concepts, or do you sometimes feel why others are not doing it, or do you see a trend there, or do you think it's still a niche that only few work on, and are you wondering sometimes why not more are stepping in? Because I mean, you with your concept and your brand, you're already showing what is possible in the jeans industry.
No, that was one of the main things why we started this company. First of all, of course, to make a nice denim brand and to grow our company. But we also wanted to be able to show the fashion industry that you can do things differently and still be able to be there after 8 years and have a successful company. So yes, the bigger companies are looking at us and they are trying hard also to follow us. Some are very sincere, are really also asking us questions. And I gave many conferences in headquarters to be able to explain what we do so they can copy it and do the same thing. It is difficult though. We have a company, and you too, I think, where we can keep our costs very low. We don't pay big salaries. We are very careful with the money, so we need less margin. That's why we can pay the makers of our jeans more money. We are still struggling to make good campaigns for marketing because it costs a lot of money and we don't have that. So it's hard to bring out the name and make it bigger. But yes, we are sharing our knowledge. Yes, bigger companies are trying to do it. Some are being very sincere. Some are cheating a little bit. They call themselves, they trap into the hero trap of purpose. Hey, you cannot say, I'm making the world better by producing genes. That's not true. Not even us. We are only trying to make it less bad and to make genes in a proper way. But that doesn't mean that because I make genes that I'm improving the world. That's not true. So you have to be fair about that. And some big brands are misusing also the trend now of sustainability, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we also had some interesting guests already in some sessions where we discussed these topics of greenwashing. But as you said, I mean, there are some really who try and to support and also collaborate, but also others that are just taking advantage of being sustainably a market trend, but not really going to its core. I think the difference between what you do and what does.
It became very clear when this COVID-19 trouble started in March. The bigger companies all canceled their orders. And they've been talking for years about sustainability and about humans and about I don't know what. And the first thing they do when the shit hits the fan, they cancel orders and 4 million people started walking home in Bangladesh without having their salaries. And then, of course, what are you doing? Are you being honest about this, or is it all about making as much as possible profit as you can? And that gave a lot away for bigger companies. You can see the articles written about that.
When you really look at this point, you can really differentiate and make out where's the difference between sustainable brands or sustainable business practices, and where still money and profit is on the first point of interest for the brands. Yeah. Bert, I mean, that was a really interesting discussion we are having, and I really thank you for having taken time for us and for our listeners to learn more about Machines. For the ones who want to know more or see more or learn more about what you do, how you do to buy your products or apply to support your team or becoming a retailer, where should they go, or what do you advise? Where can they learn or find more about Machines if they want to?
First, of course, our website, www.machines.eu. Please, if you're really interested and you want to know all the details, because transparency is also a big thing, I think. We've written a life cycle assessment from, I think, 78 pages, where we explain everything we do. And we also explain what we still do wrong or what we can still improve. But there's a lot of information there if you really are into it. Have a look. But of course, you would have support us most by wearing our jeans and talking about it and sharing your experience with us. Like our Instagram stories, things like that helps us a lot. Become an ambassador. We have this ambassador program. That would help.
I mean, there are many ways and forms where you can support Machines, find Machines, buy Machines, or also learn about more in this report in a very detailed manner. Cool, Bert. I mean, thank you very much for being
welcome.
A guest.
Thank you for making this good, beautiful podcast. Well done.
Sure. And take care. And thanks for being here. And for everybody who listened to this episode, thank you very much for listening to our podcast, Step Into the Future. And we would be really happy if you recommend our podcast to your friends or family, so that they can also learn more about sustainability, fashion, and culture change. Thank you very much.